Title of my talk is Using Multi-Level Growth Models to Evaluate a Community-Level Intervention to Prevent Youth Violence. I'd like to quickly acknowledge my two co-authors, David Henry and Deborah Gorman-Smith. And Deb and I are at the University of Chicago. David Henry is at the UIC School of Public Health. So to start out, a nice picture of the site of Chicago that you all who are not from here are probably hoping to see while you're here. This is a great picture to give a sense of just how beautiful the skyline is. And quickly, there are no disclosures to report. And here's another picture of the city of Chicago, which is the density of violent crime in the year 2010. So the darkest areas had over 400 incidents per square mile in the year 2010. And just about nowhere in Chicago had zero incidents of violent crime. So the handful of white areas are zero incidents. Those are largely unpopulated areas. The Chicago Center for Youth Violence Prevention is a CDC-funded National Center for Excellence on Youth Violence Prevention. We're one of six currently funded centers. Unfortunately, it's paring down to five centers over the next couple of years. So there's been a trend downward in the amount of funding that CDC is able to dedicate to these centers. The call for proposals funded, or the proposal funded work from 2010 to 2015, and the funding timeframe for this center that I'm describing just ended exactly a month ago, or a month and a day ago. And so these are results that I'm presenting that really cover right up until the end of funding. The call focused on youth violence as a function of multiple factors, including individual, family, peer, and community factors. So at all levels of the social ecology. And our proposal, we partner with CSPIRE. And for those who don't know CSPIRE, it is a community level intervention that works in the highest risk areas and uses ex-felons to serve as outreach workers and violence interrupters to try to prevent violence before it happens. In the call from CDC, they requested that we identify one target community and sort of put all resources into one target community. And so our selection criteria were based on the level of crime and violence. So we looked for an area with violence more than twice the average rate of that in the rest of Chicago, and with shootings and homicides at least three times the average rate. For our work, we also looked for an area with ethnic heterogeneity. That's tough in a city like Chicago, which is not very heterogeneous, but there are a few areas in which there are both high proportions of African American and Latino residents. In our target community, about half the residents are African American and just under half the residents are Latino. And we also looked for areas where we could leverage existing resources. Some of my colleagues from the site in Denver talks about having the seeds for prevention. So these are resources that may not be fully realized going into the funding cycle, but that we can work with and really build on that. And we also looked for buy-in and investment from local businesses. So it's a little bit hard to see, but this blue area right up here is our target community. This is a large part of the community known as Humboldt Park in Chicago. And here are a few pictures from around the community. So not quite the glowing sunset that you saw for the initial picture. Our center, in addition to CSPIRE, which is represented in the top right, also worked within schools delivering two interventions for high-risk youth. So the Safe Children, or Schools and Families Educating Children, is a family-based intervention working with first graders who are identified by their teachers as high-risk. And then Great Schools and Families is a similar intervention that was developed with funding from the CDC several years ago to work with sixth grade students who are also at high risk. So in addition to CSPIRE, which really targets the young adults and old adolescents who are involved in violence. We're working to try and stem the tide of youth growing into a history of violence. The other component that we added in ceasefire is that in the high school and in our target community, there's really one high school or high school that serves pretty much the entire community area as their neighborhood high school. And so our funding was able to provide a ceasefire worker in the school to work with teachers, to work with discipline officials, to try and get kids where they are, and also to deal with the overflow of violence from the community to the high school and vice versa. And we also partnered with existing agencies in the community, trying to use their resources to increase our leverage or to increase our influence, and also working with them, providing technical support and training to use evidence-based programs within their agencies and to evaluate those programs. And just another idea to show that when we look at the more severe form of violence, it's a little more concentrated, primarily in the west and south sides, with some as you go up along the lake shore, just in pockets. And to give you a sense in a more dramatic way of what the number of shootings that are occurring in these neighborhoods. So this is our target community, Humboldt Park. The first 9 months of this year, each gun represents an individual shooting. And so this gives you a sense of what these communities are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. So because we were stuck with, by requirements, one community to try and evaluate the impact, we really had our hands tied in terms of trying to leverage statistical power. And so what we did in analyzing the impact is we chose to use police beats as our unit of neighborhood analysis. The reason for that is that ceasefire, when it's implemented, they work within police beats because they're working within an area that they can coordinate with the police district on that specific beat, and that they can also be in a smaller, more manageable size area. So our target community is represented by 5 beats, and there are, and in 4 of those 5 beats, ceasefire was already in existence, and so we were providing additional support to ceasefire. And an additional 31 beats were served by ceasefire across the country. And so we wanted to try and select comparable beats to include as our comparison, so that we were comparing apples to apples, probably Granny Smith to some other form of apple, but at least we weren't comparing apples to oranges, trying to compare our impact to areas in the city that experienced relatively low rates of violent crime. So we used propensity score, and I won't read through the list. You can see the range of issues that, or variables that we used to match. One that's not on this list, I omitted, that's important, is that one of the things that has happened with ceasefire, for good and for bad, it has become a political hot potato at times, and so there have been incidents where ceasefire had political influence to try and get funding, and so that factor was included in the propensity scores, and currently ceasefire has lost a lot of their funding due to the challenges in the state budget. So through the propensity scores, we were able to identify 60 comparable beats that, in theory, if funding were not so limited, those would be the most likely beats to receive ceasefire in the future. And this map gives you a sense that our selection of beats really pretty well captured where the highest rates of violent crime are in the area. So we're fortunate in Chicago that crime incident data is publicly available and readily updated. And so within a week of the incident, the data are available for download from the city, which makes this work pretty nice because these are results that go right up until a month ago. We looked at 4 categories of crime: homicide, shooting, violent crime. We exclude robbery from violent crime because it biases where things happen. It makes the Gold Coast seem like a very high crime neighborhood, and that's really not the type of crime that we're considering. And then we had monthly counts of crime from January 2007 to September of 2015. using multi-level models, we had an interrupted time series design. So we looked at the change in crime over time from beginning of 2007 until funding started in October of 2010, and then looked at the difference in that rate of change in crime as a function of before and after that time period. We used a generalized linear model with a Poisson distribution, and we also included a seasonal covariate to account for crudely seasonal changes. I'm running out of time, I'm sorry. So our findings show, these graphs show, the blue bars are the rate of change prior to the implementation of the center, and then the rate of change following the implementation. So in terms of homicides, there were no significant effects, although the center rates tended to be decreasing somewhat more quickly after funding. In terms of shootings, what we see for the center is that we went from a significant increase over time in the 3 years before the center funding to a slight decrease over time after center funding. So we really reversed a trend in shootings during that period of time. And similarly, for violent crimes overall, we accelerated a downward trend for the center, and at a time where the comparison beats were fairly flat in their downward trend. And finally, in terms of property crimes, which although are not violent crimes, are an important marker of what's going on in a community, all three areas showed a significant decrease in property crimes or significant downward trend in property crimes, although the difference from pre and post for the center communities was greater than for the comparison communities. So in conclusion, these data provide some quasi-experimental evidence that there was some success for the coordinated efforts within the center community. The analytic methods using propensity score selection and interrupted time series provide some added power and leveraging power off of multiple time points in the analysis that can help evaluate community-level interventions, which are notoriously difficult to evaluate. And this is certainly a method that can be applied to a number of other community-level interventions. And finally, I just want to acknowledge my co-author, David Henry. He died a couple months ago. This was work that he really, this analytic work was work that he started, and I got to pick up, which is an honor to do. And so I can't present this without acknowledging our loss with David. Thank you. So it's crime incidents, so it's based on reports to the Chicago Police Department, and it includes aggravated assault and battery, criminal sexual assault, and homicides. And then shootings for these data, just to continue the clarification, are aggravated batteries with in which it's indicated that a firearm was used. Yes. It, nationally, ceasefire is now known as Cure Violence. In Chicago, it's still known as ceasefire. Probably in my mind, I'll always think of it as ceasefire because 15 years ago when I started at UIC, I was working at ceasefire and doing analysis work with them, and I still can't think of it as Cure Violence. Yes. So for the ceasefire worker, they're just, and actually for both, they're planted at the school. So the ceasefire workers are there as a resource to the school in much the same way that Orr High School has a school-based health center that is a resource to the students in the school. For the two family interventions, those occur after school. If transportation to get there is a problem, we provided support to get the families there and provided daycare or childcare during the sessions if they had other family members that needed childcare, provided food, provided dinner for the families that attended. So we do everything we can to help get them there. And these are neighborhood schools, so generally speaking, most of the families live relatively close, because these are not schools that families from outside the neighborhood would typically choose to attend. I think that's a real challenge of the quasi-experimental design, and what we're stuck trying to evaluate it is that we can't know with certainty what would have happened without the center funding, what was happening in other communities. For example, as part of the funding call, they requested that we identify a comparison community, and unbeknownst to us at the time, in the 5 years or so since we started funding, in Lasse, Chicago, a community organization in the comparison community, has had great success. So if we compared just the N of one to the comparison of one, it would have looked like we did nothing. And so that's part of why we compared to a larger swath of the city. But we fully acknowledge that there may be limits to how strongly we can attribute any causation. Yeah, and that's something that people talk about in the city, is trying to get sort of a master list of all the programs. And over the past 10 years, I've heard it talked about multiple times and great plans, but no one's gotten there yet, in part because these programs come and go based on their success or failure in achieving funding.